Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 52. This is Jamie Russo. Thank you for listening. As my regular listeners probably know, I'm also the executive director of the Global Workspace Association, and registration is now open for our annual conference, which is in South Beach this year. So pay attention. You can learn more at conference.globalworkspace.org. We'll make sure to include the link in the show notes. If you run a shared workspace or are thinking about starting one, you're an investor, a building owner, a corporate user of shared workspace, a commercial real estate professional, or a service provider in the industry, you should not miss this conference. It is the place to be a part of the conversation around the future of flexible office. This year, the content themes are focused around meet the money, meet the corporate user, and the future of flexible office. And like I said, you can learn more at conference.globalworkspace.org. Okay, so today is the second episode of the series that we started on last week's podcast on starting your search to find a location for your shared workspace. As I mentioned on the last episode, the search for space came up as a hot topic in our flight group meetings. We started a program called Flight Group to help new operators get through their first year of business with less stress and fewer avoidable mistakes. So we're starting our second cohort on June 1st. We keep the groups small. We limit them to 5 to 6 people. We have a few spots left. So if you're interested, text the word flight group to the number 44222 and we'll send you more info. Again, that's flight group to the number 44222. And again, the flight group is to help new operators. You can either be pre-space but close to starting your search, or recently opened and looking for some accountability, some resources, and some expertise to help you get through your first year of business. Okay, on to today's episode. So first, let's talk about when should you start looking for space if you're thinking about starting a shared workspace. So initiating that search process for the actual space can feel really intimidating. I talk to a lot of people who spend a very long time on business plans and thinking and Pinterest boards and market research, and they just keep waiting and waiting to actually take that step to go look for space. It's sort of that point where you feel like, okay, this is getting real, and that can be intimidating. So if you're committed to doing a space, my recommendation is to start your search process before you think you're really ready or you feel ready. So 3 reasons for starting before you feel ready. Number 1, you will invariably need to make trade-offs. You are not going to find the space that fits all the things that you want to do with the space or in which the build-out is affordable enough to do all of those things. So it's best to get yourself into the market to see what's out there and what decisions you might need to make. Your vision of the space and its layout, location, amenities, etc., may not line up perfectly with market inventory. So start getting the lay of the land and figuring out where you might need to make some trade-offs. Related to point number 1, your search may take you months depending on the inventory available in your market and the trade-offs that you're willing to make. So start early and be prepared to be patient and open-minded. Number 3, seeing the actual space will trigger considerations that you won't think of until you actually see the space. So things like the importance of the entrance, location, parking, building signage, etc. You need to get into spaces to see, you know, what works, what makes sense, and our top 10 checklist covers some of these things today. So one quick suggestion I would make before you go out with your broker, and the first episode, so episode number 51, is about working with a broker and how to find a good one to help you with your search, so make sure you listen to that. And we have a blog post on the site that has all the detailed notes about that. But before you go out with your broker, get familiar with the lingo. Because if you spend a bunch of time trying to translate what they're talking about during your space showings, it's going to distract you from actually processing the space. So, you know, terms like triple net, full service, TI dollars, CAM, right of first refusal, all these terms, your broker will help you, but you want to kind of get used to some of these without having to ask your broker to translate. So 42 Floors has a good ebook that will help you get up to speed, and we'll put that in the show notes in the blog post. Okay, so diving into our top 10 checklist, and I'm sure there are other things you should consider. This is just kind of from my experience and my perspective. So you've secured a broker, and again, listen to episode number 51 to get the details on how to find one that's a good fit for helping you find a co-working space, which is unique. It's not a typical commercial space. And so we've created this top 10 list to help you dive into paying attention to the things you want to be looking at when you go through these spaces. So you're going to start seeing spaces. And if there's inventory in your market, you may see a lot of spaces and they can all sort of blur together. And if you don't go in with a plan to keep track of the important elements and factors for your space search, you're going to have to re-see spaces or ask your broker a bunch of follow-up questions. So save everybody time and get organized up front and have a checklist ready. So we've created a downloadable version of the top 10 list in a nice little grid format so that you can lay out the spaces you see across the top with a little checklist down the left. And you can download that at everythingcoworking.com/52. You can also text the phrase spacelist to 44222. Okay, so number one on the checklist is accessibility. How will people get to your space? Public transportation, will they walk, will they bike, will they drive? If it's public transportation, or which, you know, what line is it on? If it's a train line or a bus line, is it a well-traveled line? I'll give you an example from my experience when I was in Chicago. I was in a neighborhood west of downtown, which is a great neighborhood to be in, sort of up and coming. You could get beautiful space. When I first moved in, there's lots of parking. The parking certainly went away as the neighborhood started to turn over and was less plentiful. And one of the challenges we found that I had not considered before I picked that space, and I didn't know, think of any of these things before I picked the space. I just loved it, right? So that's why I'm, one of the reasons I'm doing this episode. So one of the things that I found out as we were trying to fit, get people into team spaces. So we had private offices that were either small for one or two people or larger for up to teams of five or six. So the challenge when you get to five or six is then the people in that, on that team are coordinating and sort of trying to align everyone's interests around, you know, what co-working space they pick based on how easy it is for everybody on the team to get to. So if you pick a neighborhood that has a train line that is not the most popular or well-traveled train line, and that was the situation I had in Chicago, then you may get one or two people on the team that can get to your space because of where they live, but everybody else would prefer to be on the other train line. So we didn't anticipate that, but there's that negotiation that goes on. And so if you're doing larger team spaces as part of your business model, you want to make sure that you're central enough so that a team can say, oh yeah, everybody can get here easily enough, this is fine, versus, oh, you're kind of in this neighborhood that's like off to the, you know, not quite central, and so it's harder for three quarters of our team to get to. So if you think people will bike, are you on a route with good bike lanes? Is there bike storage in the building, or can you add it if there's not? If people are going to drive, where is the parking? Do you have free parking spots that come with your lease? If so, how many? If you have to pay for parking, at what price? Is there a parking lot in the area? If so, how far away is it? These are big considerations. I had two spaces, one in Chicago. Like I said, we had free street parking at the beginning and it was amazing and everybody loved it and it was a huge competitive advantage. And then that went away and then we found ourselves like, you know, we spend like 20% of every week trying to figure out parking solutions for people, because Chicago is a little bit of a driving city if you're not going right into the loop. So we struggled with the parking piece. And then in Palo Alto, we're in a not so sexy, like, commercial complex, but it has unlimited parking and it's not even a thought of ours ever. And it's amazing. It's super easy. People can come for meetings. People can come in for the day. People can, it's like endless parking. It's really great. So something to think about. So another factor to consider is that the preliminary data from the 2017 Global Workspace Association Shared Workspace Member Survey, and that is a mouthful, indicates that members paying for their own membership, meaning their boss did not pick the location, out of those paying for their membership, 46% reported that being close to home was the most important factor in their choice of workspace, and only 9% selected close to public transportation as their top factor. So make sure you work with your broker to understand the potential market close to spaces that you're considering, or target a high potential market and wait for the right space to become available. And by high potential, close to residential areas where there are lots of freelancers or remote corporate workers, and your broker can help you get that data. So once you get to the building, and this still falls under accessibility, it's transitioning into another one. So once they get to your building, how will they find your space? So picture this, if you will. If you're driving or walking your dog, do not close your eyes, but just clear your mind and imagine. You have found the space. You have a gorgeous view of the city skyline. You have 18-foot ceilings, a brick and timber loft space. It's the ultimate in creative workspace. The windows are plentiful. The natural light is amazing. The view, the mojo, this is it. When people walk in, they won't want to leave. You move in, you start scheduling tours. Your tours can't find the parking or the entrance. They call, they're frustrated. They circle, they waste their time. They're grumpy. You realize that you know how to get into the building, but it's totally unclear to the untrained guest. You start putting screenshots of the door in your tour emails. You include a long explanation about how the entrance is not actually in the front of the building, but in the back, kind of, well, in an alley. You hire a copywriter to find a sexier way to say, kind of in an alley. Your landlord is not supportive of signage. If your prospective members are lucky enough to get into the building, their trip to the third floor where your space is still unbranded. Your members tell you that they'd have more guests, but the entrance is kind of hard to find. Your space is on the path to becoming the best kept secret in the city, which does not pay your rent. This story is shared by a friend who used to own a co-working space in Chicago where the entrance was kind of in an alley. So that brings us to number two on the checklist, which is signage. So make sure you look at the building and the signage that is already there for other tenants and assess whether this looks appropriate and relevant to you. Make sure that you negotiate signage in your lease. This is not the kind of thing you leave to a fist bump between brokers or your landlord. Get as much signage as you possibly can. Members of your space do not want their guests, read their paying clients, to be frustrated at any point during the process of coming to meet them. And you do not want to make it difficult for prospective members to find you when they come for a tour. So signage that you want to think about getting: front of the building signage, front entrance door signage, which you may not be able to get, but depending on the type of building you're in, elevator signage, the ability to place sidewalk signs, the ability to do hallway signage. And again, depending on the type of building you're in, there may be a doorman in the lobby if you're in a Class A building who sends your guests right up to the 21st floor and you're good to go. And it's not a big deal. But if you are in more of a creative building that's maybe smaller and more of a Class C building, you want to think about signage and think about it hard. Think of it from a user perspective. User experience perspective. If you have never been to this space before, how hard is it to find the door? I always think, like, when I'm in an airport and you're kind of stressed out and you're always running late, like, all I want is really good signage to figure out where I'm supposed to go. So make it easy for people to find you. And if you can't get that, like if your space is not conducive to that or the building's not conducive, that may be a warning flag. So make sure you make note of that on your in your notes on the downloadable PDF that we're providing as you go look through spaces. Number three, what amenities are nearby? So as a co-working space, you may serve the best local coffee, and you may have a big refrigerator for those who bring their lunch. But like other humans, your members will want to walk out for lunch or head out for a latte or change of pace or some vitamin D. So within a 2 or 3 block radius, are there restaurants, coffee shops, retail? And what is the walking score for your building? Your broker can help you with that as well. And you'll want to kind of compare the nearby amenities across spaces that you look at. Number four, how old is the building? This may seem like an odd question to ask, but take it from someone who leased a brick and timber building. They can be super sexy until you realize that brick requires tuck pointing, and sometimes if the tuck pointing is way overdue, your walls can sort of shed dust. And if that dust falls onto members' computers, they are extremely angry. And often this work can only be done during business hours, which will be a distraction and noisy. And maybe if the building is old, the roof needs to be replaced. So when it rains, it leaks right into your kitchen and all over your coffee equipment. And the water pipes, you should bring in water from a service. I wouldn't even try to filter this water, says the landlord of an old building. So you want to ask those questions to think through what types of disruptions you might encounter if the building needs repairs while you're going to be there. Kind of on a related note, number five is type of management. So it totally depends on the type of building you're looking for. If you are looking at a Class A or B building, then the building likely has professional management companies, which means there are probably service level agreements in place to ensure that your maintenance requests get addressed quickly. But if you're in a Class C, which is like more of a creative loft, smaller building, you may have a landlord that self-manages the building and has other commitments that keep him away from the building, which can sometimes make it hard to reach him if something comes up. So make sure you ask so that you know what you're getting into and understand how maintenance requests are processed and, you know, in what time frame. And if the building is being managed by the landlord, make sure you try to get references from other tenants on his service levels and response times. You do not want a surprise when something goes wrong, because if it's a Class C building, things will go wrong. And if you don't have a full service lease, you will have to figure out how to get them done. So you will need a working relationship with the management company or the landlord. Number six, access to fiber internet. So not all buildings are going to have access to fiber internet. Ideally, you will, because that'll take a big, huge stress load off of you when you open the space, because this is one of the, you know, primary drivers for the success of the happiness of your members. So make sure you ask early in the process what the options are for internet service providers in the building. If you are limited to one option and it's not fiber, make sure to talk to the other tenants about their experience with the service. Make sure those tenants represent the kind of size and number of people that you would have on a network. Because if you're talking to a small tenant of 5 people, they may say everything's fine because they may just never experience issues. Or they may have a totally different type of business and, you know, they're not on voice over IP calls or Skype calls or that kind of thing that, you know, can be really frustrated if interrupted due to bad internet service. While people do go to flexible workspaces often to escape loneliness and to be a part of a community and increase their ability to focus, what they really, really want is for the internet to work and for it to be really fast. So your members will forgive you for a lot of things once they get to know you and build a relationship with you, but they will be slow to forgive internet outages or slow speeds. So make sure you know who the internet service provider is. Make sure it's a good one. And ideally, you would have options and fiber. Number seven, ask about the likelihood of tax increases. I put this on the list because I think it's really important. So it may not be the first thing you ask, you know, on your tours. This may be a follow-up with your broker once you've kind of narrowed down some of your favorite spaces. But this is, to me, is like a must discuss topic to help you with your planning. The landlord will not mention this because it's not in his best interest, but make sure you understand how the taxes flow through to you when there's an increase. So for example, if you're on a triple net lease, the tax increases will likely show up in your share of the CAM, which is common area expenses and maintenance. And work with your broker to understand the likelihood of your building being reassessed and the taxes going up. If you're in an up-and-coming neighborhood or the building has undergone a remodeling recently, then it may be in line for a reassessment, which can very likely mean a tax increase, which, depending on your lease structure, can flow through to you. So you may feel like you're in a neighborhood with affordable rent, but if you see an uptick on taxes, then that could totally blow your rent budget and all your careful planning. So make sure you ask and try to understand what that might look like and plan for it and build it into your assumptions. Number 8 is lease length. So ask your broker to get feedback on the minimum and maximum lease length the landlord is entertaining. So typically landlords are perfectly happy to sign longer leases, but there could be some reason why it's a shorter lease. It's possible that you're in a market where it's more common for subleases to be available. And there are certain circumstances in which a sublease or a shorter term lease, which I would call less than 5 years, can work. But if you're planning to do a significant build out and your space will include a high percentage of dedicated space, such as offices and meeting rooms, you want to consider a longer term lease. You know, you're thinking at least 10 years. So talk with you. I know this sounds scary to some of you who are signing your first commercial lease, and this is exactly why the flexible office space exists, because there are lots and lots of reasons to not want to sign a long lease. But if you are doing construction and you are doing a lot of build out, particularly if you're doing a lot of private spaces like meeting rooms and offices, it's going to be hard to pay that back in a short period of time. So you want to talk with your broker about market conditions and what the lease rates are likely to do over the next 10 years. And no one can predict that, but try to get some data on that and some perspective on that. Plug those lease rates into your business model with all of your startup and construction costs. Make sure that you can pay back those startup and construction costs before your lease is up. In this business model, which is a unique commercial real estate model, you are essentially trying to get cash flow positive by filling up your space quickly, and then you're trying to pay back your construction costs to get to break even and start making a profit on the business. So the more, you don't have another product that is bringing in revenue, right? I mean, you may have service lines within, you know, phones and mail and that kind of thing, or other amenities that you're charging for, but you know, someone who sells a technology product who looks for commercial real estate doesn't care as much about the lease and increases in construction costs, because they have a revenue source that's just going to like blow away their rent costs. You know, their rent costs would be a tiny percentage of the costs of their revenue. But in this business, it's basically sort of arbitraging real estate, right? You're marking up space. And so your lease is the number one most important driver for the success of your business. So you want to make sure that you get the right lease length and that you have time to pay back the money that you put into the space. Because if you're not buying the space, then all the improvements that you put in stay with the space, except for the furniture. So the more expensive your build out and the shorter your lease, the less time you're going to have in a profit-making window. So make sure you understand that clearly. Number 9, make sure you note the number of existing dedicated spaces or percentage of dedicated space versus open space. The emerging data that we're seeing is showing that it's hard to make an open floor plan profitable. So the percentage of private spaces to open spaces going up. So think like 50-50 or 60-40 or even 70-30, depending on your business model. keep an eye out for the upcoming GWA Industry Financial Study, which will have data on the profitability of different product mixes and service offerings to help you see what that looks like. So when you're looking at possible locations, make sure you look for spaces that already have some private space and ideally kind of know, you know, in your model what that split looks like and look for a space that matches that most closely. So if you want a high percentage of private spaces, look for spaces that already have offices and conference rooms. Those are expensive to build. It would be one of your highest construction expenses if you have to put up a lot of walls. And when you put up walls, then you have to redo the electrical and the sprinklers and the lighting and all those things. So make sure that you make note of that on your tour so that you can match it up to your business plan. So number 10 on the list, and again, this is not a finite list, but this is kind of the 10 we're working through today, is floors, ceiling, and power. So take a look at the ceilings, floor, and power outlets. These are all fundamental to the design of your space and can be expensive to change. So we'll start with ceilings. While open ceilings can create acoustical challenges, they are certainly all the rage, and higher ceilings can bring a modern feel and a sense of openness to a space. Drop ceilings are less attractive, but they are expensive to get rid of. They usually hide all sorts of pipes and wiring. So just make note of what's in your space so you can kind of consider that when you're making all of your trade-offs and thinking about construction costs based on which direction you want to go. So then there are floors. So while hardwood or concrete floors can also be challenging to acoustics, they are also generally considered to be sexier than carpet. That being said, if you budget for contemporary carpet squares, you can definitely modernize the feel of the space and contribute to sound absorption. There are a couple of spaces that I can think of, including Link in Austin and Covo in San Francisco, that have done carpet really well. So it can be done. And then in terms of power, this may not matter as much if you're going to do a lot of offices, but make sure you look at where the power is in the space and how much of it there already is. Electrical is very expensive, so that's another, you know, construction cost that'll go up really, really quickly, and this may be just one of the trade-offs you make, but just make a note so that you kind of know what's available in the space. So again, that's our top 10 list. We covered a lot. These notes will all be on a blog post on everythingcoworking.com. We'll link to it in the show notes, and we'll include any of the specific links that we mentioned in the show notes. And again, if you want the downloadable checklist, you can get it at the show notes at everythingcoworking.com/52, or you can text the phrase spacelist to 44222. All right, that is it for today. Thank you for joining me. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.